talking hockey right now. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
It is 8:02. We are a day away from a potential arbitration showdown between the Montreal Canadiens and PK Subban. And for insights I value more than any other on planet Earth, especially when it comes to the hockey world and the Habs and PK Subban, we have Elliot Friedman, on the Subway Restaurant's Fresh Take Hotline. I'm doing very well at this, Elliot. It's a very smooth intro here.
I was going to say, Ryan, you value my insights, but you don't even know who I am.
I'm very familiar, and you're now part of the Rogers family, so welcome aboard. We'll be bothering
you
in the middle of your vacation now.
Yeah, no problem. I rode today, so that's no problem. Besides, Jason texted me last night to warn me. It's not like you surprised me.
Well, fair enough. That's good.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming on.
No problem.
This seems all kinds of crazy for Montreal to be this close to a boardroom with a number 5.25 with an arbitrator, given what we saw Andy Green sign for yesterday, and given that PK Subban's got a Norris Trophy and was probably only second to Drew Doughty in a playoff performance this year amongst defensemen. They've got to avoid arbitration, right?
I think so. I wrote something up today that's now on the CBC website, seeing as how I'm not a Rogers official employee until September the 1st. And it compares Subban now with Shea Weber 3 years ago. And there's a lot of similarities there. Subban is 25, 3 years ago, and he's 2 years away from unrestricted free agency. 3 years ago, Weber was about to turn 26, and he was also 2 years away from unrestricted free agency. And Nashville took him to arbitration. And the one thing I always tell people is, don't freak out at the numbers in ARB. The players always come in high, and the teams always come in low. And that is because the arbitrator doesn't have to pick one or the other. He or she can go somewhere in the middle. So they both get help. Like, Subban's agency does it in-house, but a lot of players and agents get help from an expert at the NHLPA who does that. And a lot of teams go to the league or a legal firm that is specially hired by the NHL to do that. So there's a lot of math that goes into it and strategy. So I always tell people not to worry about that. The thing that happened with Weber, though, was they really lowballed him. He was coming off a contract that paid him 4.5, and they put 4.75 in as his salary. And then they went through with the hearing. Now, they were very careful not to offend him, but they lost, and they lost big. Weber got 7.5, which is still the biggest arbitration award ever. And he, although his agent said yesterday, Jared Bouquet, who used to be in Calgary, said that Weber was not mad about it, it definitely changed the dynamic. And a year later, that was Weber's last year before unrestricted free agency. We all know what happened. He went on a tour. He visited Detroit, San Jose, Vancouver, the Rangers, and Philadelphia, and he got the big offer sheet from Philly. Now, there are teams who will say that there's no use in offer sheeting Montreal, but the fact is it changed the dynamic, and Nashville lost control of everything. And I just wonder if Montreal is in danger of doing something like that too.
I would agree, and here's the thing. If you like the comparable of where Subban is at now and where where Weber was then, this has got to be well north of 7.5, doesn't it, given what percentage of the cap that takes up, given the inflation we've seen in salaries since that time?
Well, I think it is. Now, the one thing that you have to remember is that it's always dicey when you're talking about UFA years and RFA years. And for those of you unfamiliar with what I'm talking about, the salaries are always higher when a player is about to become an unrestricted free agent. Like you talked about Andy Green getting $25 million over 5 years. He was becoming an unrestricted free agent, or he is, and the Devils knew that if they let him go on the open market, he was going to get at least that. When you're a restricted free agent, the number tends to be lower. You know, Subban is still a restricted free agent, but I don't know in this case if that's going to matter. I went through their numbers to the same points in their career. And, you know, when Weber was at the same point as Subban is now, he'd played 150 more games and he'd scored more goals. But in the 2 years leading up to this point, they both had 91 points, but Subban had done it in about 40 less games, and he'd also won a Norris Trophy. So if you're going to use that as a comparable, and you have no doubt that Subban's agents will, then it's going to be a tough one for Montreal. And if they don't extend him, they have to qualify him next year, whatever the salary is. So, you know, if he goes to arbitration and they give him $8 million, Montreal is looking at 2 years of $8 million each, which is going to be the highest for a defenseman in the NHL, and then they're going to have to go out and sign him to probably a higher number for unrestricted free agency to protect against that.
So why wouldn't you offer him 8 times 8 is 64 right now?
I'm just not convinced that that's going to get it done.
More than that.
What's that?
He's going to take more than $8 million to get him done long term.
You know what? The one thing I will say about this, Ryan, I was a bit surprised that, you know, I'm doing primetime this week in Toronto, that Don Meehan came on. I was pleasantly surprised because to this point, they've been very quiet about it. And PK has asked them to be quiet about it. You know, the one thing that Meehan said in that interview, and I did ask him, is that we're hearing that they're having all sorts of problems, the two sides getting a long-term deal done. And Meehan did not throw cold water on that theory. He talked about, you know, not really knowing where the cap is going, what the variables are. Like, Taves and Kane, and you can't really compare anybody to Taves and Kane because they got, you know, they've won the two Stanley Cups and everything they've done. They just set a new market, $10.5 million. And you can't backdive contracts anymore. So I think we're still in the infancy of seeing, you know, where these contracts are going to go. And, you know, if you could backdive deals, I wouldn't be surprised if Subban's deal was already done. But you can't do it anymore, and I think it really changes the dynamic. And I think the other thing, too, is, like, there's something we're all missing here, Ryan. Like, with the Canadians having this much trouble getting contracts done with Subban, like, does the organization feel as strongly about the player as their fan base does? Like, if you ask every Canadian fan, they want Subban locked up no matter what it takes. Most of them do. But with everything that's going on here, and you look at what Carlson got and you look at what Doughty got, you know, I'm wondering if the team is kind of saying, we're not sure about this yet. Now, I don't know that for certain, but actions always speak louder than words, and there's definitely something going on here that has made it difficult for them to reach a long-term deal. And now that I say this, watch, they'll come out with one this afternoon, but Meehan sure didn't sound optimistic.
Well, they really are setting the market, right? That's why this is difficult. And you can an example of why Meehan may have trepidation about agreeing to an 8 times 8, as crazy as that may sound, as I proposed a moment ago. Duncan Keith is locked up till 2023 at $5.54 million. There are a lot of defensemen in the NHL that make more than he does now. He is among the elite. He continues to get Norris votes, and yet he's locked in at that low cap number. I suppose that's the situation Meehan's trying to avoid, right?
I do believe that, and like I wonder if what the solution is here is a 4 or 5 year deal. And you take Subban until he's 29 or 30, and when you're a defenseman, then you can still, he could hit it big a second time. With a contract there, and that's why I wonder if that's what Subban and the agent wants, and if the Canadians want it. But to me, the bigger issue here appears to be the number. Like during the season last year, I had heard that the ask was $8.75 million, and I never got that denied. Now, the one thing is that, and although I will say that people just said they wouldn't comment. I wonder, the one thing you always know with this is that the number never gets lower, Ryan. Like, maybe at the end it does, but the longer a team waits, the more the balance shifts of leverage to the player because he gets closer to unrestricted free agency. And, you know, I think Subban wants to stay in Montreal, but he believes very strongly in himself and what he wants. And I think it's going to be on his terms, no matter what they may be. But I just wonder if there's something here we're not seeing, like the team isn't sure yet, or whatever the case is going on, because, you know, you look at all the players, the cornerstone players who get locked up now, a lot of them don't even get close to unrestricted free agency. And, you know, he's still 2 years away and there's still time, but it just seems that the contracts with him are always tougher than the contracts with most other players. And you just have to wonder why that is. Because I thought he had a really good playoff. I thought he played great for them.
Yeah, no, and that was what I mentioned from the outset. I mean, Drew Doughty might have been the only guy that had a better postseason as a defenseman. He was phenomenal. He's got a Norris Trophy. It's really, really curious, Elliot, because you look back and hindsight's always 20/20. Was the bridge a really bad move because you could have this guy locked in for three more years at close to $5 million, or were they just getting to the same issue they were going to have 3 years down the road now instead of then?
Well, there's a great debate about that, because when Edmonton locked up all their guys, Nugent Hopkins and Eberle and Hall, people ripped them. They said, why'd you give those guys that money that soon? And one of their answers was, it's going to cost us a lot less in the future, which is true. If you look at it, and you especially where Taylor Hall's production is going, you can imagine how much, like, if they had to sign Taylor Hall now, what do you think his number would be?
It'd be big.
It would be bigger than six.
Yeah, I was going to say probably seven sounds fair.
Yeah, so they have saved money. But you remember how Edmonton got ripped for that? Like, why are you giving the money so soon? And, you know, you haven't accomplished anything. So, Ryan, it's sort of like six of one and half dozen of the other. You know, no matter what you do, somebody's going to rip you for it. Look, Montreal got good value on this contract, and Subban clearly earned it. But, you know, the thing is, it's always tough. Like, Meehan said that, you know, Subban is not angry about this. You know, Jared Bouquet, who represents Weber, said in 2011 Weber was not angry about it. But I think you have to say that publicly. But I think privately, if you're an athlete and you're like Subban and Weber are at the top of their field, like your level of competitiveness and your level of drive to get to that level is enormous. And I think it's impossible not to imagine, just like Weber, who's, you know, personally like 180 degrees different guy from Subban, if he gets upset about it and says, okay, we're going to aggressively attack the market for an offer sheet, you know, I can't see how Subban would feel any differently.
So what's the worst-case scenario if Montreal today went to Meehan and said, okay, you want 875? 8 years, sign it right now. What is the worst thing that could happen to the Habs if they did that? I really don't see the risk being that high. He's a great player. He's perfect in the community. He's coming into his prime. He's not there yet. And the cap continues to go up, and they've got oodles of cap space. There's only five teams with more cap space than the Habs.
Yeah, I think that it's obviously something that Bergevin, it's something internal that we don't know. That's what it is. And I think maybe they're worried that Subban isn't 100% there, ready to handle that contract. Maybe they internally don't feel he's an $8.75 million player. I don't know the answer to that. And, you know, the one thing about Bergevin is he's been consistent that he won't talk about it. And I think he's smart, because anything that gets said about P.K. Subban turns into hysteria. It really does. Like, I remember talking to him last year in October. I think we did a game in Ottawa in November, Ottawa-Montreal. And, you know, the craziness was all about Subban's ice time. And Bergevin was saying, like, I can't believe, like, this the firestorm over this issue. So I think he knows better than to comment publicly. Unfortunately, you know, that leaves us a lot to speculate. And I wonder if the issue is just the number that Subban wants, or they just don't feel comfortable giving him that deal yet.
What does your gut tell you happens before the doors open in a boardroom with an arbitrator inside?
I can't imagine they go through with this hearing. And I think if you're Montreal, you've got to know that, you know, you can't offend the guy, and you can't. I mean, you know, is it better if you settle for seven something than eight? Even though they've got a lot of cap room, like whatever you give up here is going to set the bar for your next contract. So I don't know. If I was Montreal, I would settle. I would take as much of a loss. I would go in there and I'd say, look, we're willing to take a loss, some of a loss, and maybe that loss is 7.5. He makes more than Carlson. he makes more than Doughty, even though people can argue about their games. Their fact is it's a different point now. You know, I would do that. I would go in there and say 7-5 for a year. We'll talk again. And if you're Montreal, the one thing you've got to say is we've got to have an answer by next summer. Like, we are not going into the last year of P.K. Subban's deal before unrestricted free agency and saying we don't have certainty on what his future is. That, to me, is the deadline for Montreal. It's next summer, and if we don't have an answer, we may trade him.
Yeah, and if they're not comfy with 8.75 now, it's only going up next summer when he's 1 year away from unrestricted free agency. I'm shocked if it doesn't get done long term, but I'm so far away from this, I have no clue. I just don't see why you can't get along with your franchise player with all the cap space they have. It'll be fun to watch. One other thing, just a note on Andy Green. What are we missing on this guy in the West that we only see twice a year as Flames fans?
Well, I think he's just he's a quiet, you know, I really like Andy. I think he's a good, first of all, and this is totally irrelevant to his stats, is, you know, he's a really good guy to talk to. He's a very insightful guy. So I do enjoy talking to him. I find you really count on players who help you understand things and explain things to you. I find whenever I see New Jersey, I may have a question about the way they're playing or something that happened. And he's very smart. So, and I think that translates his game on the ice. I think the thing about, you know, Green is that he's a typical Devil. He's not a superstar, but he's a good player who doesn't get a lot of attention because he doesn't say a lot publicly. He's quiet. He's your typical Devil. The one thing about him that they really love is that and the other players tell me about this, is he's like an expert on angles. Like, his angle play is excellent. They say that he rarely takes a bad route to go do something or cut a guy off. He plays a lot of their tough minutes, and he's a really good teammate. And actually, I started watching. I remember I went to a game last year where New Jersey played in Toronto and watched him, and I do think that's one thing about him, Ryan, is that if you ever watch him during a game, you will see how he always seems to be in the right position. He doesn't deliver the big checks. I really didn't notice him blocking shots a bit, but he's one of those guys who makes the little plays that are hard to quantify. And I do remember there were a couple of rushes, I think with Kessel, and I'm not 100% sure it was Kessel, but I think it was, where he cut him off really nicely. And I think that's a tremendously underrated skill to have, especially playing defense in this league.
It is July 31. We appreciate you taking some time for us to talk hockey, Elliot. And can't wait till September 1. Boomer's going to be texting you all the time.
No problem. And just one other little note, Ryan. I was checking up on something. You know, Ottawa signed Robin Leonard today, and they were also supposed to meet the same agency, which also represents Subban, represents Clark MacArthur and Bobby Ryan. And I just looked in to see if there was anything going on in those guys today, and all I heard was just opening preliminary conversations. So it doesn't look like anything is imminent with either MacArthur or Ryan, both of whom can be extended but aren't free agents until next year.
That is Elliot Friedman breaking news. Thank you very much, sir.
No problem.
All right, we will pause. When we come back, we'll talk a little tennis. Rogers Cup set to begin next week in Toronto and Montreal. Eugenie Bouchard, Milos Raonic, rising stars on planet Earth, never mind the tennis scene. All eyes will be on them starting next week. Carolyn Cameron of Sportsnet Connected, the morning edition, next on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Interact right now. Text 960-960 to sound off. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
It is 8:24 on your Thursday morning. Pinder in for Boomer. Humphrey's on the updates. And we have a major, major event coming next week in Toronto, Montreal, that I think could not be coming at a better time. Eugenie Bouchard fresh off her first finals appearance in a Grand Slam, and Milos Raonic fresh off a semifinal at Wimbledon. Pleased to talk tennis with Sportsnet Connected's Carolyn Cameron. Good morning, Carolyn.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, I'm watching you on TV right now. This is very magical. You're looking at the camera, talking to James, and and I'm talking to you. This is crazy.
Yeah. I don't know how that's possible, but it is.
How's the show going, by the way?
We might cheat and tape it the night before. It's going well.
How's Seaballs to work with? He seems like a fun guy.
He is a fun guy. Yeah. Very nice.
Now, he always is happy to throw out that you're the tennis expert on the morning broadcast. This is what I watch at about 4:30 to 5 every morning when I get to work. Very exciting stuff. How jacked are you for the Rogers Cup next week?
I'm pretty jacked up. I'm excited, especially as you said. I mean, with how well Jeannie and Milos have been doing, this is the most anticipated Rogers Cup yet for Canadians.
So you're going to be there. Tell us about your role and exactly what you're going to be doing for the next 2 weeks, I guess.
Yeah, so I do courtside reporting. So I'm going to Montreal. The women are in Montreal. The men are in Toronto, and it happens in the same week. So I'll be on the court every match, courtside, and then interview the players that win on the court after they win a match. So, yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
This is a one-take workplace. No pressure, right?
Yes, exactly.
What about Eugenie here? This is the rankings really do seem to lag her play. She's now been to three consecutive major semifinals. What was it? Li Na at the Australian Open, at the French she got all the way there, now to the finals at Wimbledon. Yet she comes into the tournament as a 7. Is she not considered a favorite given the home court and how strong she's been in all the majors this year?
Well, when you look at women's tennis right now, she has arguably been the most consistent player, because she's the only female who's made it to all the semifinals at the Grand Slams. Anna Ivanovic, she's also playing very well this year. She's the only other one that's really been as consistent as Jeannie's been. So, yeah, based on Jeannie's record, is she better than that? Right now she has been, just because of her consistency. But the interesting thing about the Rogers Cup is this comes after Wimbledon and after a bit of a break for some players. Jeannie won't have played a tournament since Wimbledon and since that Wimbledon final until she is in Montreal next week. So it's hard to tell how some of these players will do and how they'll transition from the grass to the North American hard courts, but Jeannie has a good shot.
Yeah, certainly can't argue with the track record of late. When did she jump up on the radar in your mind? Because there's always been, you know, players ranked between 50 and 100 in the men's and women's side over the past few decades. But at what point did you legitimately look and say, my goodness, she might be the best in the world in the coming years?
Well, what's crazy about her is that she hasn't even been on tour for a full 2 years. It's only been about a year and a half, just over a year and a half. Last year was her first full year on tour. And last year she had some good results, and around this time last year at the Rogers Cup when the women were in Toronto, she played okay. She lost to Kvitova in one of the early rounds, but a lot of people at that point were saying, wow, this girl's good. She's really confident, more confident than you see a lot of these young players who are, geez, still teenagers. So you could start seeing it then, but then she just kind of tore it up, as you mentioned, at the Australian Open, making it all the way to the semifinals. And that's when this extra confidence boost kind of came for Jeannie. And as you can tell on court and when she talks off court after matches, she is tough and she is very confident, not just for her age, but for any tennis player on tour.
We're chatting with Carolyn Cameron of the Sportsnet Connected Morning Edition. We had Brett Hart on earlier today at 7:30 this morning. At one point, he was considered the most widely recognized Canadian on planet Earth. He talked about going to matches in India, Africa, China. I heard this argument the other day, and I didn't buy it at first, but the more I think about it, the more I think it's possible. Eugenie Bouchard, if she can put together a run at number one in women's tennis, may become today's most recognizable Canadian athlete. Is that fair to say?
Oh, absolutely. Because starting in, I guess it was February, so after her Australian Open run, the WTA, the women's tour, already started kind of parading her around and using her more for promotional things and events before tournament, because they know that she, well, is already starting to be, but could be the it girl for the tour in the future. Think of the international stars that have come from women's tennis, especially lately. Serena Williams, Maria Sharapova. These women, they had the results on court, which then led to their success off the court. Jeannie's already having big success on court, and the sponsorships are already coming through. She has one with Coca-Cola Canada. She's not going to just be a Canadian star. She's going to be a star on the international stage. So, yeah, she could be Canada's most well-known athlete.
Well, you think about the fame that Anna Kournikova had. She never won, and yet you know, yep. She's larger than life in all continents. You'd be able to recognize who Anna Kournikova is. And Eugenie does have that easiness on the camera that Anna had, not to mention she can actually win.
Well, exactly. Yeah, I mean, Jeannie's so marketable. Like, I mean, she's pretty, she's good, she's a good talker, she's charismatic. But it's crazy to think that the amount of money that she could make coming forward, not from just tournament wins, but from sponsorship deals.
We're chatting with Caroline Cameron of Sportsnet Connected. What about the men's side? Toronto's an interesting tournament to me because Milos is entering the men's his prime in the men's tour in a different spot than where the women's tour is at. I see the women's tour, the WTA, and I look at it's totally up for grabs. No one is in their prime aside from Eugenie, I suppose, or heading into hers, whereas the men's, you're in one of the most dominant eras in terms of Nadal, Federer, Djokovic, and even Andy Murray winning Wimbledon a couple of years ago. This is a very difficult time for him to try to break into the top four, whereas if this was a different point in tennis, he might be a number one already.
Well, yeah, I think you hit it right on, because something that kind of bugs me is so many people are saying, well, Jeannie's getting all this success so quickly, and she's 4 years younger, 3.5 years younger than Milos. How come Milos can't just break through and do something? Oh, he's just a big serve and nothing else. As Jeannie even admitted back in November, the women's tour, as you said, is wide open, and it's so much easier for these young players to come in and have the upsets because other upsets are happening in the draw elsewhere. For someone like Milo, she has done a heck of a job, especially in the past year, of really moving into that second class in tennis and getting closer to these top players. This is a sport that's been dominated by just a select few over the past decade. It's incredible. So for Milos to be able to be where he is right now and playing a lot better than he was a year ago, things are looking up for him.
And it's a kind of neat side story of Vasek Pospisil of the Okanagan, who trains in Vancouver, where I imagine you and Seaballs get all your work done on Connected.
Yeah.
He is now all of a sudden becoming this guy that's had a ton of success in doubles, back-to-back tournament championships with Jack Sock, his American partner. And yet, at this very tournament last year, it was him and Milos in the semifinals going head-to-head.
I know. Like, Vasek, he's been having injury problems all season long. And before Wimbledon, he wasn't really sure if he would play doubles. And then Jack Sock, who he didn't even know that well, came up to him and said, hey, do you want to just, why not? Let's maybe try doubles. What do you think? And Pospisil said, yeah, okay, we might as well try it. Then they go on to win the title. Then they win the title in Atlanta just a week ago. And now, right now, he's competing at the City Open in Washington with Milos, and he's winning in singles. So if he can stay healthy, he has a bright future ahead of him, whether it's in doubles or I think what he wants is to break through more so in singles. The only tough thing for him is tennis is based on defending points, and that's how your ranking goes up. So he has a lot of points to defend since he made the semifinals of the Rogers Cup last year. But it's even that he's not going to focus on that. He's just going to focus on the tennis.
Can he be in that same class that Milos is in now? Can he be a top 10 world player, or is he physically limited more than Milos, who does have that booming serve and that incredible wingspan, the height that allows him to be so successful?
I think he is a little, it is going to be a little bit tougher for him because Milos does have those things to his game. I mean, Milos' serve can't be beat right now on the tour, and players have a really hard time returning it. That is his weapon, even though he has really powerful grand strokes and a net game that's improving. For Vasek right now, I think the hardest part is just trying to stay healthy because he hasn't been able to do that, and he's suffered from back injuries all year. So hopefully he'll be able to stay healthy through this hard court swing, and maybe we'll see something from him.
Who else should we keep our eyes on? We mentioned the three rising stars. We also have the elder statesman, Daniel Nestor. Is there another young Canadian we should know about or that we might find out about during the Rogers Cup in the next couple of weeks?
Well, actually, someone we already know of is Alexandra Wozniak, and she's struggled with injuries throughout her career. She's older than Milos and older than Jeannie. She was kind of around before they were. And she's been getting healthy. She's been climbing up the rankings, and she'll be in Montreal. So she might be able to do pretty well because, again, as we just talked about, women's game is pretty open. And in a tournament like this where people are coming off breaks, or coming off injuries and just transitioning onto the hard courts, this is when upsets happen and strange things happen.
Caroline, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate you talking some tennis. We're all excited about Montreal and Toronto, and hopefully you've got a big Eugenie victory to talk about by the time things wrap up in Montreal.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate it.
All right, that's Caroline Cameron of Sportsnet Connected, the AM edition. And yes, she is on the TV screen right now while she was doing the interview. Very talented. She and David Copperfield, my favorite magicians of all time. We'll break. We'll come back. We have Andrew Harris of the BC Lions at practice yesterday. Josh Humphries, a one-on-one with the Canadian running back who leads the CFL in rushing yards. That, and then we'll stump the hump on your Thursday on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
You're a sexy socialite. All you do is socialize. And you're always so polite. And your outfits tantalize. When you want to spend the night, all you do is roll your eyes. They crush on you.
Flames, Stamps, NFL, MLB, Calgary's only all-sports radio, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
It is 8:39, big thanks to Caroline Cameron. Tennis, I know, it's like, we would not really have cared that much 2 years ago, but with what we saw at Wimbledon, we had a doubles champion, Milos in the semis, Eugenie in the final, can't get the sense that... Can't help but get the feeling that this is we're a nation on the rise in the sport. We're better than the U.S. at tennis right now. It's crazy to think that because they were such a powerhouse for so many decades. There isn't a very dominant American tennis player, probably outside of Serena Williams right now in the sport, which is crazy. Canada is emerging as a world power in the sports. I don't know if anyone saw it coming. It's pretty neat.
It's one of those things. It's like all these sports Canada is starting to get on. The last one is soccer. I mean, if you can get into the World Cup and get soccer going, it's kind of everything. Like we're
there was a few
everything.
Canadians in the World Cup. They just weren't playing for their own country. They were playing for other countries. Not very nice. But yeah, that's the biggest hurdle this country faces. World Cup's immensely difficult for this country to get into. Okay, enough on the soccer and the tennis. Sorry, guys. We will get to breaking down the John Lester trade that sends him to Oakland with Johnny Gomes. In exchange for Yoenis Cespedes, the Cuban slugger who is a back-to-back home run derby champion, he's going to hit some serious home runs in Boston. I know a lot of people don't like the return for Boston, but you think about him in that massive, cavernous ballpark in Oakland, moving to the bandbox that is Fenway with the monster, with the short porch at right. Are you kidding me? This guy's going to have huge home run totals where in Oakland, you had to hit it a mile just to get it to the warning track. So, I don't mind the deal at all for Boston's sake. I know a lot of people wanted more. But at the end of the day, let's say Aaron Sanchez was the guy they could have got for Lester or a package Sanchez and a lower-level prospect. Aaron Sanchez still isn't a legit everyday Major League Baseball player. He may not pan out. Now, he may be an ace one day, but he could flame out like so many other first-rounders after a little bit of success in the majors, i.e. Ricky Romero, which, you know, that is the cautionary tale. Young guys, young prospects can have some success. It does not mean they're going to be a front end of the rotation starter their whole career. I think they know what they're getting in Cespedes. He's going to fit well in that ballpark. And, geez, he leaves a good team and goes to a rebuilding young team in Boston. And we haven't said that about the Red Sox in a long, long time. You were at Lions practice yesterday, Josh, and you had a chance to catch up with,
over the phone.
From practice, Andrew Harris, the league's leading rusher. Maybe a quick intro to your conversation with him that we'll play momentarily.
Well, Andrew Harris leads the league in rushing yards right now. He also leads the BC Lions in receiving yards as well. He was the top Canadian of the month in the CFL as well. So lots of good stuff from Andrew Harris. Good conversation here. Talked a lot about the season. Travis Lule being out, Kevin Glenn coming in, that adjustment. They're a Jekyll and Hyde team. What has worked well? What hasn't worked? And near the end of the conversation, also talk about the concussion issues in the CFL. Is the league doing enough to protect running backs? I asked him, does he feel like the league's doing enough to protect players? And his answer, I think, is really going to surprise a lot of people.
It is an 8 o'clock start at McMahon Stadium tomorrow night. Stampeders.com for your tickets and information. That roster, by the way, is officially out from the Stampeders. Nick Lewis will not play tomorrow night, as taking out that Canadian tailback really does mess up their ratio between international and national players. Here's Josh with Andrew Harris yesterday.
Andrew Harris, who just happened to be named the top Canadian in the CFL. First of all, Andrew, thanks a lot for doing this and joining us today. I guess let's start with that, being named the top Canadian of the month in the Canadian Football League, a Canadian running back. Has to be a pretty cool accomplishment for you.
Yeah, you know, it's a nice accomplishment. It's a good accolade, but at the end of the day, you know, our football club right now is 2-3, and that's not great. So, you know, the personal side of it, it's good, and you know, I got to credit the whole line in front of me, the receivers making blocks downfield, and the quarterback getting the ball. But at the same time, we need to be better as a team. And you know, we got a tough challenge this Friday.
Well, let's talk about that record for you guys, 2-3 right now. Kind of been an up and down season for you, a little bit of a roller coaster for the BC Lions. The Jekyll and Hyde team of the league is what a lot of people are referring to you guys right now. What have you seen go right, and what have you seen obviously go wrong for you guys for the first bit of the season?
I think from the jump, you know, we were a relatively young offense. You know, with the new offensive coordinator coming in, I think he's just still trying to figure out what kind of players he has and how to mix them in and you know, how to get the guys into the football. So I think it's a combination of things, obviously, with the new quarterback as well and him understanding what kind of players he has. And it's just been a roller coaster. And when we're on, and when we're not, we're not. So, you know, when we watch film, there's just little differences and little things where, you know, we're scoring a touchdown or throwing an interception, it's going the other way, you know. So it's just been up and down, like you said. But at the end of the day, you know, we're getting closer and we're getting better as the weeks come on. And more importantly, we're gelling as a team. So hopefully that'll pay dividends at the end of the season.
Obviously, for you guys, it's been pretty tough to deal without your number one quarterback in Travis Lule. It's had to be an adjustment for you guys to not have him in the lineup yet this season. Looked like he's getting closer and closer to get back. But how's the adjustment being without Travis in the lineup?
Well, yeah, Travis is definitely our leader. And you know, the guy's been here for a while and has been for a while. So, you know, not to have him in the lineup is tough, but you know, with Kevin Lund, he's as you guys know in Calgary, you know, he's a guy who won football games, and you know, he's been around for you know, over a decade. So you know, he's well versed in this league, and you know, his 40,000 yards that he's passed for, you know, it just shows him and how good of a quarterback he can be and how good of a quarterback he is. So he's been great, but at the end of the day, you know, our leader is not in. And you know, we're waiting for him to get back, but at the same time, you know, right now this is Kevin Bunn's team, and you know, we're doing a good job.
I guess one of the only positives out of this whole situation with Kevin Glenn having to be the quarterback, not to say anything against him or anything, but having Travis Lule out, is the fact that you did get a full training camp to get used to Kevin Glenn. It wasn't like this was sprung on you within a week. You knew coming into the season that Travis Lule was going to be injured. So talk about just getting that full camp and full preseason with Kevin Glenn and what that did for you guys.
Well, I think just having him in there for the full time and, you know, just getting to know him more as a person than anything. Just chilling with him and understand how he works and how he ticks. You know, like I said, he's a great guy to have around him. He's a great leader, and, you know, he's done a great job for us.
Andrew Harris joining us down the Subway Restaurants Fresh Take Hotline, running back for the BC Lions, of course, getting set to take on the Stampeders Friday night at McMahon Stadium. I guess, Andrew, turnovers have been something that's been a bit of a challenge for you guys this year, especially the last couple of games. What is the turnovers or the reason for that? Is that something that's maybe just a mental thing, or is there something you guys need to work out?
I think it's totally just guys getting comfortable with each other and getting in the right spots. You know, everyone, when someone throws an interception, everyone looks at the quarterback. But you know, it's really a team fail, and you know, it could be possibility of a missed protection. It could be a possibility of a malfunction with the receiver out. It could be a number of different things. You know, and in most of those cases where there was interception and mistakes made, that's the case. So. We just got to nip that in the bud and be better that way.
We talked about it earlier. It's been a fantastic month for you, the top Canadian in the CFL. A lot of rushing yards. You've been pretty good so far in the first month of the season in the CFL. What have you thought has worked so well for you personally?
Well, I think at the end of the day, just, you know, just getting in the rhythm. And there's been games where I've had, you know, limited touches. There's been games where I've had plenty of touches. So just when you get into that rhythm and you feel the game, you know, this is my fifth year as a player in this league, and the game is definitely slowing down for me, and, you know, seeing things a lot easier, and, you know, it's a lot easier that way. But at the end of the day, I think it's just, just like I said, yeah, just the game has slowed down, and just getting that rhythm when the ball is coming away, just being able to make plays.
With Travis Lule being out of the lineup, and to go back to that for just a second, do you feel like maybe there's some added pressure on you to contribute a little bit more and to step up your game that much more in his absence, having your number one quarterback out of the lineup?
Yeah, when I looked around at the beginning of this year, I was like, wow, I'm the one guy that's been around here the longest as far as skilled players and the running back position. So, you know, you got to put that on your shoulders a little bit. You got to take that on. But at the end of the day, you know, you can only do so much.
Not only for you has it been a great season on the ground, but also in the air. The 311 rushing yards leading the CFL right now, but 268 yards receiving also leading the BC Lions. Is that something you always want to get into your game a little bit more, or have you found a little extra in the receiving game this year for you?
I think as soon as I've been into the league, I've always been a running back and caught the ball out of the backfield, so I don't really think that's anything new or anything that's different. You know, it's just, you know, maybe more so now as, like I said, just everyone kind of getting to know each other and going along. But I definitely think that it's been, you know, something that I've done ever since I've been a starter in this league. So I just wanted to continue to do that.
Last couple of games, obviously, for you guys, we can look back at them both at home. Kind of the story for you guys on against the Montreal Alouettes. You guys have a great game, put up a lot of big numbers offensively. But then the next week, the offense just can't seem to go in the loss to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Maybe just talk about the last two games and that Jekyll and Hyde that we saw from your team.
Well, I think the biggest issue was we had similar game plans and instilled that from the Montreal Winnipeg game. So, you know, I think they made great adjustments on what we were doing. And we just didn't have answers. But at the end of the day, you know, we were still. It shouldn't really matter what you do as an offense. I think if you're well sound and well versed in what you do, no matter what you do as an offense, should work against whatever they're doing. So, you know, as an offense, we need to be dictators, and we just weren't dictators in that game.
Andrew Harris joining us down the Subway Restaurants Fresh Take Hotline, running back for the BC Lions. They get set to take on the Stampeders Friday night at McMahon Stadium. It is an 8 o'clock kickoff. I wonder if there's always some pressure on a team when they host the Grey Cup. We've seen the last 3 years, the team that has hosted the Grey Cup has won it, including the BC Lions. You guys are back hosting it once again this season. Is there some extra pressure in that at all, or is it just something that's not even in the back of your minds whatsoever?
I don't think it should put out of pressure. If you're looking ahead from week one or week four or week five, whatever it is, to the Grey Cup right away, I think your head's in the wrong space. But you know, it's in the back of the mind, but at the same time, you got to take every game week to week, and game to game, and you know, you just got to take it as it comes. You can't get too far ahead, and you know where you are in week one or week five or whatever it is, you're going to be better, and you got to know that, and you just got to chip away at it week to week as this long 18-game season comes here.
If I could just get a quick thought from you, Andrew, also on G. Roy Simon. You guys honor him in the last home game as well. A guy who had a fantastic career with the BC Lions. You got to play with him a little bit at the start of your CFL career before he moved on to the Saskatchewan Roughriders and other things. But you guys obviously honoring for his time with the BC Lions. What are some of the things that you learned from him on the field and off the field, the kind of player and the kind of guy that he is?
Definitely. G. Roy was a guy that was a big mentor to me. Even when I was first coming to training camps and stuff, one of the guys who was a huge supporter of me, and you know, a guy who openly told me that, you know, I was the best running back at camp, and you know, even after I'd get released and stuff. So, you know, he was a big supporter of me, and you know, he allowed me to be in his back pocket and kind of learn from him just the different things on and off the field to deal with as being a pro, and you know, as he got more into this into becoming a known player in the CFL. So. And then all the things on the field, you know, just how to take care of your body and all those types of things. So, you know, he was a great mentor to me, a great guy to learn from. And, you know, to see him get honored the way he did was, you know, I was definitely proud of him and excited for him. And, you know, no one's ever done it better than. So, you know, it's just a tribute to play with him, and, you know, definitely blessed and honored to play with him.
Obviously, Friday night's going to be a tough game for you. The Calgary Stampeders, their offense has been struggling, but their defense has been very good once again this year. A lot of weapons on the defensive side of the ball. How do you prepare for knowing that you're going against such a tough defense for the Stampeders, especially for a guy like you as the running back who's going to be relied upon to put up a lot of numbers?
Well, as I said, they are a tough defense, and we have to be really sound. As far as the roller coaster goes, we need to be at the top right now. We're pretty Calgary, so we just got to do our job. Stay disciplined, and you know, Calgary's a team that's, you know, really, really stout, but you know, no defense can be perfect. So we gotta utilize and maximize the opportunities when they come to us. And the one thing that's kind of good is that we understand how Stubler runs his defense, and you know, a guy who coached here with us. So you know, he does have tendencies and things that we are used to, but at the same time, he also throws wrinkles in from a defensive side of things. So. You know, it's going to be a fun game. McMahon's always a fun place to play, and we're looking forward to it.
Andrew Harris joining us down the Subway Restaurants Fresh Take Hotline, running back for the BC Lions. Just a couple more for you, Andrew. If I could, I just want to get a thought on the John Cornish situation here. tough situation for him. He's on the 6-game injured list with the concussion from a week one hit from Kyrese Hebert. Now, I know there's been a lot of talk from the fans around the CFL, a lot of talk from some management and coaches, especially here in Calgary, that they're not happy with the lack of discipline for Kyrese Hebert in that situation. As a running back, as a Canadian guy who has a relationship with John Cornish as well, your thoughts maybe on that. Do you think that the league is doing enough to protect some of the players from concussions and things like that?
I think they're doing too much, to be honest with you. And John Cornish and Kyrese Hebert situation, that was a bit different. But, you know, as far as the quarterback, you know, there's been some penalties this year where the quarterback gets hit in the face and to hand. And, you know, that's not harming him. But when it's intent to injure, like it did seem in John Cornish's situation, I think that should have been dealt differently. You know, intent to hit low. You know, when guys are trying to take out knees, when guys are wrapped up, that's another thing where I think that should be policed more. But there are just certain things that are, you know, over-policed and some things that are under-policed. But definitely in the case of John Cornish's hit, I think that there should have more dealt with in that situation. But, you know, it is what it is. You know, anytime you put the pads on and that helmet on, you know you're putting your body at risk. And, you know, that's why the fans love it, and that's why, you know, it's a man's game. So. You know, I wish John Cornish, you know, a healthy recovery. And I know it's, you know, concussions are tough to deal with. And, you know, you never want to come back too early because you're messing with your brain. So, you know, I wish him all the best in coming back because, you know, it's nice to see a guy at his stature and at his level of playing, you know, maximum and doing great things.
And farther to the concussion talk, Andrew, I mean, John Cornish comes out himself and kind of says that he put himself on the 6-game injured list because he's got to worry about his health in the future. We know what we've seen in the NFL the last few years, starting now to in the Canadian Football League with concussions and the impact they can have long term for some players. For you, is that something where you put a, you know, pretty big importance on your personal health, and maybe something came up like that, would you be able to maybe say, you know what, yourself, I want to go on the 6-game because I still have a future after football to worry about, so I got to make sure I'm healthy.
Yeah, you know, I think if it comes to a point in my career where, you know, I'm worried about what my life's going to be after football, you know, that's my time to call it quits. You know, I've been very fortunate not to ever have a concussion, you know, knock on wood, but, you know, it's definitely something that you don't want to mess around with. And, you know, the fact that, you know, John put himself in the 6-game injured list just goes to show you how much it means to, you know, guys. You know, football is only, you know, maybe 10% of your life, you know, of your whole lifespan. So, you know, you have to really take care of it. You take care of your body because, you know, you still have a lot of life to live after. And, you want to make sure you're still, you know, contributing to society and you're not, you know, dealing with brain trauma or, you know, having bad knees or certain things throughout your life.
That is Andrew Harris of the BC Lions. Canadian tailback leads the league in rushing yards, also leading his club in receiving yards as well. Stamps, Lions, 8 o'clock tomorrow night. It is the second of two games. The prior one pits the Argos against the Alouettes. Somebody is going to get a second W of the season.
And first place in the East on the line.
Just scintillating matchup. Let's get to it. We've got Stump the Hump trivia. We ready to do that? No. We got to get out of here. Oh, my goodness. We got to postpone Stump the Hump.
Do it right at start at 9 o'clock.
We'll do it at 9. Okay, so we'll come back at 9 o'clock. We're a little more flexible in the 9 hour. We got to hit the top of the clock. Jay's mad at me. I'm missing my timing. He's very mad. He's throwing things.
He's angry.
He's spitting coffee.
No,
he's actually.
You know that he's punching the table.
That's
too.
As loud as I've heard him. Listen to how mad he is about being told he's mad when he's clearly not mad. All right, we'll come back in a moment. We will again hear from Jeff Glass, the Calgarian, playing on his fifth KHL team. Great stories live from Italy earlier this morning as he is at training camp with his expansion team in the KHL, talking about the oddities of A, living in Moscow, Kazakhstan, and playing in the KHL. That is next on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.